Blog Talk Radio.
Even in the ring?
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chang.
Is it me, man? Is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing. Not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or boxing is better. You know, everybody has their own opinion.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao. Selling out.
Leave it in the ring.
Radio.
Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room. If you look on, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.
What's going on, everybody? This is David Chen. Welcome to Leave It in the Ring radio show. I already see a couple numbers lighting up. I believe it is our other hosts, Dave Duenes, 97 Ruff, and 916 Chris. Are you guys with me?
What's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How about yourself? Are you on the road yet?
I am on the road, man. You know, I'm going off to Sacktown, Sacramento, California. I completely forgot I got to cover Vicente Escobillo versus Kevin Kelly, who's fighting tonight, and also a heavyweight prospect from Golden Boy, Ashanti Jordan, is also fighting up in Sacktown. 916 Chris, I was trying to get a hold of you, brother, but I guess I didn't have any luck getting a hold of you today. But anyways, so I'm going to be up over there in his neck of the woods to cover the fight, so I did ask David Chen if he could cover for me on the switchboard. We got a couple of guests coming on today. We got Karina Moreno, pound-for-pound female champion of the world, and also we got Virgil Hunt, the head coach for Andre Ward, calling in around 6 o'clock to chop it up about us, about their success against Edison Miranda and what else is in store for them in the future. Other than that, man, how's everything else going with you guys? How's the weather over there, 916 Chris, over there in Sacktown, brother?
You ain't here yet. It's cool, man. It's like 80s. It ain't on fire like it was last weekend. So you'll be able to survive, bro.
All right, right now I'm trailing through Stockton, California, man, and I'm just checking out all the tatas on the freeway, you know, and that's pretty much it what I'm doing right now. Dave, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm about to take a couple of these more calls. I see a number 352. I think that's my man Blood. Is that right?
What's going on, baby?
All right, man.
Brother,
I see another number. An area code 909. Caller, can you tell us who you are and where you're calling from? You're on the line.
Hey, what's up? What's good? It's Grindshine.
What's up?
What's up, man?
How you doing?
Hey, Blood.
What's going on?
So, are you going to change your call letters, man? Because I heard you can't be saying boy. You got to say man.
Oh, man. You would have to bring that shit up. Nah, it's always your boy Blood coming at you once again, baby.
I don't know, man. I mean, you got somebody out there saying, why are you saying boy? You got to say man. Dude, I'm a man.
Hey, Seth Norris, message to you, dog. If you listening, you a bitch for flagging my fucking video, you little faggot. When I see you, I'm going to fuck you with a broomstick, bitch.
All right, brother. So anyways, we got Virgil Hunt calling in about 6 o'clock. We're going to have Karina Moreno calling in, pound for pound, best female fighter out there to date. You know, if you haven't had a chance to peep her out, you got to check her out, man. She's phenomenal. You know, I didn't get to come across her until I heard about her because she's from Watsonville, which is pretty close to where I grew up at, which is San Jose, California. And so I heard a lot of stuff about her, but I never had the chance to visually sit down and watch her perform and watch her do her craft, and then I had the chance. I got to watch her train, and even by watching her train, I was like, wow, this girl's phenomenal. Then I go see her fight at the Tashi Palace. She was on the undercard of the Andre Ward fight, you know, his last fight piece before the Miranda fight, and man, I got to tell you, I was amazed. You know, I mean, you talk about action-packed and puts in the work, she does it, you know. When you meet her and you see her, she's a very, you know, petite, very shy, you know, to herself. But man, when she braces up that glove, she's a completely different person. It's not a cat fight when she walks into that ring. I gotta tell you that. She gets in there, man, and she claws like a tiger all the way. You know, so Blood, man. Other than that, how is Florida doing over there, brother? How's the weather?
Man, right now, believe it or not, man, it's cloudy as fuck, and it's been storming all weekend. Right now, I'm standing outside. It's raining and shit, so, you know.
Really?
I'm enjoying it, though. We needed the rain over here, man.
So, you know, man, I didn't have a chance to chop it up with you guys about the whole Edison Miranda and Ward fight. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I was there, and I was watching it, you know, and I was a couple, you know, I was in the press row a couple rows back. But after the fourth, fifth round, it seemed like Miranda hurt his left arm because he became a one-handed fighter. I mean, was I the only one seeing that, Blood, or did you see that too?
Yeah, man, it's just, it didn't matter anyways, man. It ain't like he was going to do anything anyways, man. Ward just outboxed him and outshined him, man, on that night. And, you know, I think he should have just went knockout, personally.
No doubt. Hey, David Chan, do we have Karina Moreno calling in yet?
We do not. Not yet, brother.
Okay, she should be calling in about 5:15. And around 6 o'clock, like I said, we should have Virgil Hunt calling in to chop it up with us a little bit. 916 Chris, man, what was your whole take? Hey, first off, 916 Chris, I don't know if you heard about this, but immediately after the fight, Miranda didn't come out to the press, post-press conference, but they confiscated his bottle because they found some type of chemical in his bottle. Do you know anything more about that?
No, I didn't hear about it till after the fight. I heard that they confiscated it. I haven't heard anything. I've heard his trainer come out and deny that there was any, you know, foul play or anything along those lines. Obviously, even if there was, they're not going to admit it. I mean, you know, Margaritos, they got caught red-handed, and they still swear they didn't do nothing wrong. So, I don't know, man. We just got to wait until the investigation is cleared. You know, we saw with that whole Margarito thing, we don't want to jump to conclusions, you know, even though something did turn out there. But, no, I haven't heard anything.
Right.
I have no idea what's going on. I'm sure something was confiscated, but I don't know what exactly it was.
You know what really puzzles me up a little bit, man, is that a lot of these guys that get caught with either roids or some type of substance in their gloves or whatnot or putting some in the drinks, have they not noticed the trends of them, that they're not successful at the long run? They end up losing worse than what they normally would do in performance if they would have just stayed, you know, natural. I mean, look at the history. Fernando Vargas looked like crap when he went in and he fought Oscar De La Hoya. He ended up slowing down after the fourth, fifth round, and it was because of due to roids. You know, then after that, you got Margarito. Then after that, even with Shane Mosley, you know, he had some type of substance in his body facing Oscar De La Hoya in the rematch, you know. But, I mean, don't you think a fighter at one point in their career, they go, hey, you know what, I'm not going to take nothing because one way or another, I'm going to end up getting caught red-handed.
I think it's just too much of a risk nowadays to take any kind of supplement or to cheat in any kind of way. You can't get away with modern technology. You can't get away with it like the fighters of the past. I think it's too much of a risk. You're taking a risk on losing your job, your occupation, and on putting a damper on your legendary status, man. You know, I think it's just way too much of a risk. These guys need to stop this, man. They need to just come in there, fight clean, fuck all that other supplement shit from Max GXL to whatever. You know, that shit. Just come in there, man, as yourself. That's the way I look.
You think though sometimes, like even Miranda's case, like, you know, Chris said, we can't prosecute this man yet because, you know, it's got to be proven first off. But let's just assume for a minute, okay? You think that maybe seeing that he's at a crossroad in his career and he's really looking at this as being his last long shot, that he puts himself in this under this pressure light, that he's got to do something phenomenal in order to stay in that red carpet, David Chen?
Man, I'm thinking about this whole issue, and it's like, I mean, yeah, there's pressure because a lot of these guys, they use these supplements and stuff like that. They need their extra edge because they're trying to get that spot in the limelight. You know, they're trying to get their shot. But what I don't get is guys who already got there. You see, I mean, they're already at the top of the sport. All they can do is lose from there. You see what I mean? Any little thing can destroy their image, but they do it anyway. Like, like Margarito was on top of the world. What is like what is that camp doing letting people catch them with like plaster in their hands or any or whatever it was. You see what I mean? Like just think about it. Say they didn't do anything that night and he still had a loss. We wouldn't be looking at him the same way right now. You know, we'd be going like, "Oh, well, you know, he did his best and you know, he'll you know, that's just not a good matchup for him. He'll come later." But now we're screaming for like him to get basically banned from the sport. You see what I mean? And I just don't get it. Like
I don't get it either, you know. I mean, let's get another point of view. Who else do we have on the line, Dave? Remind
Grind
me. Grindshaw.
We got Grindshaw.
Hey, what's Grind up?
Where you calling from, Grind?
San Bernardino, California, man.
Okay, go ahead, brother. Give me your point of view. What do you think about this whole situation with Miranda possibly having some type of substance in his bottle?
I mean, I think I agree with all you guys. What you guys are talking about is at the end of his career. He's trying to come back, do anything possible to scratch his career in and get a win, but it never works. You always get caught at the end, and these guys, they really do have to stop this because, you know, you put a bad damper on the sport of boxing within a whole.
Let me ask you this, Grant. Put yourself in his situation and help me try to understand. What do you think a fighter is thinking, though, knowing that, you know what, I'm at this edge of my career, but there's a huge possibility that I'm going to get caught? I mean, I just don't get it. You know what I mean? I'm going back and forth on this where if I'm in a situation and I'm thinking, look, either I just lace up my gloves or I go out like a punk. Do I do either one or which one do I choose?
You know what? A real warrior goes out on his back, win, lose, or draw. And if he feels like he cannot beat this type of caliber of fighter, he needs to fight an easier fight or fight a fighter that he knows he can beat. But you don't go in and cheat and you can hurt another person or hurt your body at the end. I mean, look at Lyle Alzada. What happened to them people that took steroids or muscle enhancements or something like that? Your body, you look good on the outside, but you're not going to be good on the inside. And you just all the way around, don't cheat. Just keep it natural. If you feel like you can't beat a top fighter like Andre Ward, just fight an easier fight and get your money that way.
Mm.
So we're going to have next week, we're going to have Robert the Ghost Guerrero with us. Next Thursday, along with the hot prospect from Philadelphia, I believe, which his name is Danny Garcia. My apologies. Danny Garcia getting on the line with us to talk to us a little bit about his career. And also, I believe it's in June, their ESPN date that they're going to have in San Jose, California, at the San Jose Pavilion. You know, man, I don't know if you guys saw the whole press conference of the Marquez and Money Mayweather, and you know even the ESPN you know interview with Brian Kenny and how offensive Mayweather got, I guess because of the question, is the most logical but the most, I would say, fluorescent question out of all the questions that anybody's going to ask is, why are you picking on a little fighter by the name of Marquez? But if you're in Money Mayweather's team, what is the one sole reason you could come up in defense for Money Mayweather?
Ooh, man. Well, I would probably say the same thing that Mayweather's saying. But, you know, Mayweather is using, in my opinion.
What is he saying?
Well, he was saying that Marquez is more marketable when you heard the interview. And then he asked him specifically, he said, why not sugar Shane Mosley? And he was like, well, you know, Shane Mosley isn't as much of a ticket draw and all that as Marquez is, which is a damn lie. But, you know, he's just trying to dance around the reality, Mayweather, of the whole thing. And the thing about it is us boxing fans have been asking these questions. So I don't see how a guy like Mayweather could turn a question into a question. Every time you're asking him a question, he's turning that into another question. And I just don't get that because we're asking the question, why not step up and fight some of the top welterweights? That's all we want to see. People are going to have their opinion, but we're always going to want to know. Some certain people are going to want to know why you ain't fighting Sugar Shane Mosley, why you ain't fighting gunning for the winner of Miguel Cotto versus Claudio. Why not some of these guys?
Well, let me tell you this. I mean, this is the only thing I can get off of Mayweather, answering a question with a question, is very well prepared. When you have a fighter that is in that type of pinnacle of the stage of his career, he's got people that would literally sit there, like, let me put it this way. back in the 50s, 60s, and the 70s, Motown was phenomenal for prepping up their artists when it came to interviews or being in public view, you know, having the media eat out of their hand. That, to me, is what Mayweather's camp is basically doing, is having this man properly prepared to answer questions with questions and keeping you kind of still on the edge of your seat, going like, man, did you just get anything out of this? Because I didn't get anything out of this. Did I just hear what he said? Because, you know, I'm not understanding that. David Chan, you know, before we get into this, let's not make sure we got Karina Moreno on the line and having her hold on too long, brother. So whenever she pops up, please interrupt and patch her on through, okay?
You got it, Dave.
So going back to Money Mayweather, blood, I'm thinking, do you give him credit for having such a solid team to give him such a well-protected, barrel in front of him, a wall that is hard to penetrate because he's been prepped so properly to keep us in the dark?
That's the thing, man. We don't want to be kept in the dark no more. We just want to see a good fight, man. We don't want to see no one talk their way around fights and, you know, we're just tired of seeing this, man. We've seen it with Roy Jones for so long, and now Mayweather's—he's got excuse after excuse, and none of his excuses are valid. If somebody asks you a question, you don't answer the question with another question. If you ask why are you picking up Marquez, and you're saying why not, you know, then you know, I mean, come on, you're not giving us any feedback here. So we just want to see
Absolutely.
You fight, Mayweather. We just want to see you fight, man. Enough excuses.
I agree with you. Chris 916, man, I mean, if you're working with a Floyd Mayweather Jr. And you obviously have to prepare him, and let's say we're not able to get Floyd Mayweather Jr. and you're in his camp, what is the answer to give properly to fight fans when they ask you, why are you picking on the much smaller man? And why are you saying he's a much bigger draw than Shane Mosley, when Shane Mosley has had a greater success in destroying a guy that was literally indestructible at the time at 147. I mean, mark me this, man, and look, Marquez did a fantastic job dismantling Juan the Baby Bull Diaz, but Baby Bull Diaz was not looked at as a destructible person. Nate Campbell, who's very vocal, and really, honestly, I wish that all fighters were very vocal and very opinionated like Nate Campbell, but, you know, can't have that all, right? But why do you think he's saying, oh, Marquez is more marketable than Shane Mosley at this point of their career?
All right, first off, let me preference this by saying that this is not my opinion. This is me speaking from Mayweather's camp perspective. My first answer to the question would be, Marquez called me out. If I'm Floyd Mayweather, Juan Manuel Marquez, after he beat Diaz, he didn't say he wanted Manny Pacquiao next because he knew that Pacquiao was going to take that fight. He said, I want to fight Floyd Mayweather Jr. So that could be my first response. Second, you know,
but then my response would be to this. But Chris, my response would be to this. Like I said, I want you to put your shoes in his camp. My response would be, but Mr. Chris Herrera, everybody
well,
calls
on,
off.
I gotta interrupt real quick. I got a number and I'm gonna check to see if it's our guest caller. Okay, I got a caller from area code 831. Caller, can you state your name for us and tell us where you're calling from?
Karina Moreno.
Hey, Karina Moreno, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. We've been waiting for you to call so we can chop it up with you a little bit. I was kind of explaining to the guys and, you know, pretty much everybody that's listening that I'm pretty sure we got a lot of listeners that are from your hometown and for everywhere else that have seen you fight, you know about you. But how are things going for you first off, and what is new and what is happening next in your career in fight-wise?
Everything's going real good. I'm getting ready. I have a big fight July 16 down in Lemoore at the Tachi Palace Casino. I'm going to be defending my world title. So I'm very excited. I'm fighting Mary Ortega down from Missouri. She's got more experience than I do. Her record is 30-5 and 8 KOs. Got more experience, and I'm moving up in weight for this fight also. I'm going to be moving up to 108. I've been fighting at 105, but for this fight, I'm going to move to 108, and, you know, I feel good. I just picked up my training a little bit more intense than usually, just getting ready for the fight.
Kareem, let me ask you this. Why move up to 108? I mean, are you having that much problems right now getting a fight at 105, or the money is just not there at 105, so you have to just gradually move up to the bigger weight classes?
Well, you know what? At 105, I pretty much already dominated that weight division already. I feel like, you know, I think I should move up in weight and fight other, you know, more fighters at a heavier weight. Like I said, I already kind of dominated the 105 pound division. So,
mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, okay? What is more satisfying? Slapping around one of your sparring partners that's a male, or dominating a division?
Dominating a division, for sure.
Come on, you mean you're to tell me that when you got a guy that's across from you, you know, when you go down in training camp, because we've talked about this before, and I've asked you, hey, do some guys hold back? And you say, yeah, sometimes, but then you put it fight. Does that satisfy you knowing that when they decide to put it on you, you know, using, you know, obviously their male strength, but you're able to hang with them and really outsmart them, outmaneuver them, pepper them up? Do you walk away going like, I got you?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. You know, when I do that, you know, when I'm all done with sparring everything, I know that all my hard training and everything has been, you know, it's paid off. You know, my I'm more intelligent than they are in the ring, and it definitely feels really, really good.
What are you doing right now to put up 3 pounds? A lot of people are going to be like, 3 pounds is not a whole lot, but it is. It makes a big difference to your body. So what are you doing right now to add that extra mass to your body? Because, I mean, you got a small, very small petite frame.
You know what? I've been lifting a little bit more weight than usual, lifting heavier weight, less reps, just heavier weight, drinking a lot of protein. That's how I'm putting my weight. When I start working out real hard, I drop down in weight real easy. For me, in order to maintain that weight, you know, I gotta lift a little bit more weight, do more weight training.
So did that mean you get to eat a little bit extra burritos, enchiladas, or any of that? You know, does that kind of get into the dietary or no?
I try to eat pretty much, you know, what I usually always eat, you know, just I don't want to change a whole lot my diet, but I do eat a little bit more meals than usual, you know, instead of having 3 meals, I'll have 4 or 5 meals a day.
And what does that consist? When you say meals, I mean, what do you actually, are you having? Are you having like carrots and peanuts, salad, or are you doing the traditional Mexicana thing? Are you, you know, scarfing down on some, Roach Coast tacos or any of that?
You know, I love fish, so I eat a lot. I eat a lot of fish. I have a lot of salmon, a lot of chicken, steak as well. But I do have tacos, though, for sure. I gotta have those tacos.
Absolutely. Well, I'm gonna pass it on to some of the guys that are on the panel. I'm gonna pass it to my co-host, Blood. But go ahead and ask your question to the La Reina, Karina Moreno, out of Watsonville.
All right.
Hey, what's up, sister? I wanted to ask you, man, can you give us a little bit of my bad on the man. I got to get used to that. Can you give us a little bit of input on your next opponent? Let us know what she all about, what you looking for, how you looking to dominate this fight, and what lays ahead from that point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, you know, Mary Ortega is definitely not a pushover for any reason. You know, she's got way more experience than I do. Her record's 30 wins, 5 losses, 2 draws, and 8 KOs. So she's got a lot of experience. She's fought real top opponents. She fought Elena Reed, Holly Dunaway, Susie Quintanquian, Jerry Seitz. I've seen her. You know, they call her the Heat. You know, that's her nickname. And she's got that kind of a style that she comes straight forward, puts a lot of pressure on you. She's not much of a slip. She doesn't slip too much or duck, but she just pretty much, you know, she's relentless, you know, attack, straightforward, a lot of punches. So, you know, I'm expecting a real, real, real good fight. And, you know, and it's what a better way than, you know, to have a style like that. That's the style that I like to fight. Those are the opponents that I like to fight, people that come straightforward at you. And, you know, you don't have to be chasing them down, hunting them down. Most of the time, pretty much, I would say probably, you know, 80% of my my opponents that I've fought, I've always had to chase them around, cut the ring off, you know, to get them trapped to in order for them to fight, or else they just keep on running. And like I said, Mary Ortega, she's the type of fighter that just, you know, you hit her and she keeps on coming forward at you, you know. No matter what you throw at her, she keeps on coming. So I think it's
right.
A real, real good fight.
With you adding on the weight training, are you worried about this affecting your speed any, though?
You know what? No, not really. You know, I mean, we've been doing a little bit of a kind of a little bit of different. We're doing more like explosions. I've been bench pressing, and I've been putting a lot of weights. And I just do I do about four reps, and I explode on them for explosion. And you know, when it gets closer to the fight, you know, we'll definitely stop the weight training, so that way, you know, like you said, it doesn't affect. Because I know that, you know, a lot of weight training will affect you in your speed and everything. But you know, we're gonna cut it down a little bit down when it's getting closer to the fight.
Sounds good. 916, Chris.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, women's boxing in America just doesn't seem to get the recognition it deserves. You know, women's fighters, it never seems to be showcased on television. Rarely you'll see a fight on ESPN. You never see women's boxing showcased on either HBO or Showtime. I was just curious, what do you think, you know, what do you think the reason behind that is? And do you talk amongst other women fighters about that, you know, why it is you think that you guys don't get the recognition that you deserve?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, I think the biggest, the reason that, you know, that hasn't happened, we haven't gotten that many, that recognition is just because that when, you know, when female boxing started, you were having the female fighters that didn't have a whole lot of experience. You know, they didn't have a lot of experience, not that many skills in the ring. So it kind of got portrayed as a, just kind of like a show, you know, sideshow.
Right.
You know, and, but you know, nowadays, I mean, there's a lot of talent out there. You're having a lot of females turning pro right now. You know, they went through the amateurs, and that's what made me so good in the ring is my experience in the amateurs. You know, I was a member of the USA team 2 years in a row.
Mm.
Mm. Wow, you know what, Karina? Being a member of the USA team, how intense was that? And was the bar set for you guys to perform a lot better than the men?
Oh yeah, it was definitely you know, it was a challenge, you know, just you know, knowing that you were in the USA team, you're representing your country, you know, you got to go out there and show your skills. It was definitely it was challenging.
David Chen, you have a question for the Reina?
Yeah, before I do that, I'm going to take a call from one of our other callers. I got the coach on the line. I think this is somebody important. Coach, are you on with us right now?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Coach. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. What's up, guys? I want to say hello to everybody. To Ms. Morano, no question for you. Just wanted to congratulate you on your successes in the ring. Very accomplished boxer. And just to touch real quick on the whole date or question about women in the ring, as a coach and a trainer, my wife's actually an amateur fighter. She just won the PA State Golden Gloves, the Eastern Regional Golden Gloves at 119 pounds. But my point being is that a lot of times I think men look at women in the ring, they don't give them the respect they deserve. And as a coach training both men and women, professional and amateur, I can tell you that women coming into the gym pick up a lot of the technical things that we teach a lot faster than the guys do. And it's not to knock the fellas, because there's a lot of talented guys out there boxing, but the majority of the women that I've trained tend to come into, and I guess part of it is probably there's no ego when they come in. And so they come into the gym a little more open-minded and like a sponge. And basically I've seen them actually progress a lot faster many times as some of the guys that come in and actually start training. So, again, you'd be commended on your successes in the ring, and I'm wishing you much continued success.
Thank you.
That's, you know, Coach, I got to agree with you in a lot of that, you know, but I'm thinking the reason why the women are a little bit more like a sponge is because of the fact that they're already walking in with a strike on their back already because being a female. You know, I mean, I'll be very honest with you. You know, when I've heard of Karina Moreno in the beginning, I heard a lot about her, but really, honestly, never saw her fight. When I go down to interview and I watch her train, I was at an awe. I was like, whoa, holy shit. You know, because, you know, when you think of a female fighter, you think of a Christina Martin or a Mia St. John, and they all have a gimmick. With La Reina, and even the coach, you know, I've seen the girl that you work with. I mean, man, I'll sit there and go, wow, this is phenomenal. I guess, you know, Karina, my question to you is that it's very successful in Germany. Women are like, they can make the stature of a Mayweather or Oscar De La Hoya. So I'm wondering, how come you haven't made that career decision of just picking up and moving? Could it be because your family based already in Watsonville, or you're just like, you know what, this is home, I'm going to make it here no matter what?
You know what, you know, definitely, you're right. You know, in Germany, women's boxing over there is real, real big, you know. You know, and I think one of the reasons that it's real big over there is because, you know, they are featured on TV shows. They're featured on pay-per-view shows over there. They're televised on the big you know, TV broadcast, and that's what definitely makes it so big over there. You know, I mean, I would love to go down there and fight down there. You know, one day. There's actually you know, there was actually one girl that I was hoping to fight, you know, fight her before she retired. Her name was Regina Hemlett. She holds a record of 54 wins, 1 loss, and 16 KOs. The only loss that she had was when she came to the U.S. Her other fights were all in Germany. So, you know, when I decided I wanted to go down there and fight her, I knew it would be real, real hard for me to win, especially when you're going to a different country. But I just felt that I had the skills to beat her, the aggression to beat her. I was actually hired as a sparring partner for her twice, in 2004 and 2005. I went down there and I was her sparring partner. And I mean, obviously, in sparring, it's totally different than in a real fight. But you know, I felt real, real good in sparring. Then I took it to her both times I was down there, and she commentated to me after the fight when we were all done. She said, yeah, and sparring, you know, sparring with you is like sparring with somebody that's like 100, you know, it's worse than being in a fight with you. And, you know, I felt that was a real, real nice compliment for her to give me.
Absolutely.
But,
that is a great compliment.
But, you know, she retired, and we were pushing to probably fight her, but she decided not to. She fought somebody else, and she's all retired. But actually now they have somebody else that took her place, very, you know, that's no, you know, she's real big. She's another, you know, she's like an Oscar De La Hoya over there. Her name is Susie Kahn.
What's her name again? Repeat that for me. I'm sorry.
Susie Kantankan.
Kantankan. Okay. Mhm.
She's from Germany as well. And you know, she's got a tremendous record too. She's undefeated. She's 24-0 with 16 KOs. She's from Hamburg, Germany. And she holds two titles at the flyweight division. She holds the WBA and the WIBF.
Now, has there been any talk about you guys mixing it up yet, or is this you calling her out here on the radio show to hopefully that it comes across her ear so that she could hear you, that you're saying, yo, I want to get in the ring with you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, I want to, you know, if she's considering herself to be the best, you know, I consider myself to be the best too. Obviously, she's much bigger than I am. I fight at 105, but I think I could take her. I've seen some of her videos. I've seen her fight and everything, and I think I definitely stand a chance in there with her, and I would love to fight her. You know, and my team is trying to they're trying to work something to see, you know, hopefully she'll fight me someday.
That'd be fantastic, you know. Hey, guys, if you haven't seen her, well, I also have done an interview, and you can see Karina Moreno, La Reina, do some of her workout on my channel. I'm also going to be putting up her last fight that she had at the Tashi Palace, where she had a dominant win over Sharon Gaines. Is that right, Green up, right. And I was there for that fight. And, I mean, the fight was phenomenal, you know. But talk about not losing a round in that fight. I mean, you were catching him with some overhand rights, you know, and you were coming in and out. You were slipping. You were, you know, pretty much just standing your ground. And, you know, and I'm surprised the girl decided even to come back out every time. I thought for sure that she would just kind of stay on the stool, but she had a lot of heart herself, you know. And that's one thing about the female fighters. They do got a lot of heart when they step into the ring, and they give us an entertaining fight. Dejan, do we have any other callers on the line that want to ask Larena another question?
I have another caller from the area code 831. Caller, you're on the line. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name is Rick. I am from Watsonville. I'm actually your coach.
Coach Rick Noble, how you doing, brother?
Doing fine. I just want to call and just say hi and you know, talk about Karina a little bit. You know, obviously she said that we had gone over to Germany twice, and they know her very well over there. It's going to take a while for them to decide to fight Karina. And, you know, Karina's not as strong as Cece Kentekian, but what Karina has with her is a tremendous endurance, heart, and her defense. She's very difficult to hit.
You know, Rick, me and you, we've had a pretty good conversation about the women fighters and about promoters not really giving them the opportunities, you know. Can you kind of, you know, elaborate a little bit what we had spoken about one time in your gym and, you know, what's that guy's name? I've got to say, that gym that you got in Watsonville, that's a fighter's gym all the way. I enjoyed myself when I went out there. You know, can you kind of break it down to me? Why are these promoters not, you know, really locking down La Reina Karina Moreno? Why are they not putting the money and the investments in a fighter that comes to fight every time out?
Well, you know, right now, like, you know, Karina had mentioned earlier, you know, early in the career in boxing, you know, the skills were not very good. And right now, the women that are coming out right now, including Karina, have a tremendous amateur background. You know, the women are coming out now with 75, 100, 150 amateur fights. But the reason some of them are not turning pro is that there's no opportunity for them. These promoters are afraid to take a chance on them. And it's unfortunate, but when you go to Asia, you go to Europe, the women are featured there, and they're treated like gods. But here in this country, they're not really willing to take a chance on any of the females right now. It's unfortunate, and it's unfortunate for some of these female boxers that are out there are very, very good and very competitive. Boxers, they just won't give them a chance to fight on, you know, some of these big shows.
Somebody listening right now, tuning in and listening to La Reina Karina Moreno and Coach Rick Nobles, how would you describe her style in the ring and pretty much her whole realm of a career? How would you put it?
Well, you know, Karina, she actually comes to fight. I mean, it's not some of these fighters that sort of get technical. But she fights like a typical Mexican fighter. She doesn't take a lot of punches. She slips, she ducks, but throws a lot of punches. And like David Avila described her once in one of his articles about Karina Moreno, when she comes out of the corner, she's like a little tornado, and she throws a lot of punches, and if you can't keep up, too bad.
That's absolutely true. David Chen, we have any other questions out there for either Coach Rick or Karina?
I have a caller from the area code 760. Caller, you're on the air. Can you tell us where you're from, what your name is, and go ahead and ask your question.
Ivan.
What's up, Ivan? Go ahead and ask your question, brother.
I don't know. I just got logged in. I just want to know, how did she get started to boxing and who got her into boxing?
Well, I'll describe that is that, you know, Karina actually started as a kickboxer back in 99. And she had a record of 4-1. And she was so athletic that I asked her if she wanted to do boxing because there was rumor there might be Olympics. And I thought, you know, she'd do all right. And I took her to the national championships with one win and one exhibition. She went in there and beat the number one, number two girl in the country, won the title on ESPN2, and she was a national champion. 2 weeks later, she's on the United States women's boxing team. Competes in Finland, the largest female tournament, beats the Hungarian, the French, wins a gold medal, and then voted as the best fighter, and that was the beginning of her career.
My other question was, when is she basically fight right here so she could get, like, basically attention right here, you know, just like a regular boxer. Mm-hmm. Like, who do you think?
Well, that's up to the promoters. You know, I mean, we have a promoter at the Tachi Casino, Christian Prenup. He's the one that's been promoting her. And obviously, we've been trying to get her on TV, but we haven't been real successful, you know, and of course, the TV world, we want to put her on, and obviously a good opponent. We're not going to, we don't want to go on TV with an opponent that's not going to be very good. We want to showcase the women's boxing. I think that Mary Ortega, the fight that's coming up, would be an excellent fight on TV. They both throw punches, they both come at each other, they have good defense, and it would be very, they're both very skilled. And we would like to have that. We would love to have that fight on TV, but it's not going to happen at this time.
I think they should put her against Muhammad Ali's daughter. You know, that'd probably be a good fight right there.
Well, obviously, you know, boxing's in weight divisions, and Ali's a little bit bigger than Tarina. But I believe
a lot bigger.
I believe that Tarina has a lot better skill than Ali. Ali never fought amateur. She was a 3-time member of the United States Women's Boxing Team. Took world championships and numerous national titles.
Hey, Rick, let me ask you about that, about Ali, you know, his daughter, obviously. Does it kind of get underneath your guys' skin? You guys are doing all the legwork to establish yourself as being pound-for-pound best fighter in the world, but yet you get someone that kind of walks in and learns as they go when they get into the ring.
Well, you know, that's a problem with sometimes women boxing. Ali, who came in unexperienced, but came in on her dad's name, eventually became a very good boxer. But it's unfortunate that women sometimes come in, they have a gimmick, either they pose nude or they committed a crime or they're a daughter or relative of a famous athlete. That's unfortunate. We'd like to see the women come in with their skill and their boxing.
Yes, sir. Let me ask you guys this. Karina, you know, growing up, you know, I mean, you know, like Rick said, obviously you started out in kickboxing, but when you converted to becoming the boxing, who were some of the people that you looked at, you know, that you that would motivate you, you know, that you would see that was it a female fighter, was it a male fighter, or you just basically didn't even watch boxing at all?
You know what, I when I was young, I grew up watching boxing, and I always wanted to be a boxer. I had a cousin that he used to box, and I always looked up to him, and I always wanted to be a boxer. So when I got the opportunity to actually do it, you know, I was like, you know what, I'm going to put 110% at this sport. I want to be on TV, you know. And, you know, and I just dedicated myself to real hard, you know, my training, you know, training real hard every time I would go to the gym and everything to succeed in boxing.
Well, Karina is, I've had a lot of, you know, male athletes at world champion kickboxers and boxers. And, you know, Karina is really a tremendous athlete, tremendous. And, you know, male or female. And so, you know, I'm very proud of her. I mean, she's really, at this point, is very easy to work with and very, very coachable. And she is a pleasure to work with. We have a lot of fun training.
That sounds great. You know, Rick, hearing you guys right now, the frustration in your voice is pretty much, you know what, we're not getting the exposure that we wish that we're due already here in the States. And you're talking, you know what, and you're absolutely right about talking about either the woman either has to have a crime on her record or a gimmick, you know, glad to pose nude, or she's got to do something that's just out of the ordinary to make American fans turn and look at her. But let me ask you this. Have you guys ever thought of maybe going to a fight and calling out that person and shaking up some noise, shaking the cage a little bit to make the animals in the cage get a little wild so that people take notice and they start going, yo, I want to see this fight? I mean, because if you remember, Ali, even though she was learning on the job, there was a fighter out there, a Nemesis by the name of Ann Wolf, who was shaking the cage enough to make everybody go, we want to see this fight on pay-per-view.
Well, yes, that's one of the deals that we're going to do with the possibility of Susie Kentekian is that, you know, hopefully that we can get some stuff on YouTube. Obviously, we're trying to put some video of Karina sparring with the legendary Regina and showing that Karina handled her and that we want Susie Kentekian next. So that's a possibility that we're going to try to do it. Here in this country, you know, we just don't have that. Obviously, and maybe one of the problems with women boxing, in order to be a great boxer, you have to have great boxers around you. And talk about Ali, you know, Muhammad Ali. He had a lot of great boxers around him. And he lost some fights and barely won some fights, but that's what made him a great fighter, just like other fighters that we have now. You talk about the welterweight, you know, the Leonard, the Hearns, the Durans, you know, in that welterweight division, there was a lot of great fighters, and that's what made them great.
Absolutely. You know, Karina Moreno, let me ask you, what do you respect of that opponent, Tanaka, right? Am I pronouncing her name right?
Kentikian.
There you go. What do you respect about her? And what don't you respect about her at this moment?
One of the things that I obviously don't respect about her at this moment is just the fact that, you know, she fights, all her fights are over there in Germany. She won't come over here to the U.S. and fight over here. Because I think that she feels that, you know, she's got a big advantage fighting at home. Why come over here and take that risk? So definitely, I mean, I'm a big believer. If you consider yourself to be one of the top fighters, you should go and fight anywhere. Don't matter.
Is there a big money difference of you going up there or her coming down here? I mean, is the money less if you travel across the pond, or is there more money if she comes across over here to the States?
I think there's more money over there. That's the other reason too. I think that, you know, she won't fight over here as well. I think over there she gets there's way more money than here. So that might be one of the possibilities that, you know, that's the reason she don't want to come over here. But like I said, I mean, you know obviously money is good, but.
Do you feel that's a good enough reason though, not to come over here and face you?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good reason. You know, I mean, you know, money is money, but you know what? If you consider yourself, why not fight the best? And why not come to the U.S. and make a name for yourself over here, not just over there? I mean, like I said, here in the States, here in the U.S., she's not a big name. She's just, you know, you'll ask somebody and they'll be like, oh, okay, they won't know who she is. But you go to Germany and you say her name, obviously everybody knows her over there. But if you're considered one of the top fighters, why not come to the U.S. and make a name for yourself here as well?
Well, you know, if she came over here, you know, if a promoter can put on a fight and put on, you know, their legendary fighter, you know, Susie Kentekian against our American, you know, that'd be a very good draw if it's promoted right. And obviously, I know that Bob Arum wants to have a fight in San Francisco at the AT&T, you know, using the Filipinos. But the Filipinos have a female boxer over there named Gretchen Abino, who is the WBC Intercontinental Champion. And that would be a very good fight to promote and start women's boxing. And I know that Arum has promoted women in the past. It would be a great opportunity.
Absolutely. David Chen, do we have any more callers for, Rick and Karina?
No, actually, I have a question for Karina. I read that you work with your family at your restaurant, a taco restaurant, something like that. How did your family, your brothers, and all of them feel about your box? Can you tell us a little bit about what it means to them that you are where you are today as a fighter?
Oh yeah, you know, definitely. I mean, my dad is real, real proud of me. My mom as well. My brothers, obviously in the Mexican culture, you always want to have a son to be the fighter, and it turned out to be me, the girl, the youngest one. So definitely.
How do your brothers feel about that, Karina? I mean, do they mouth off at you? They're like, hey, go get that plate. Never mind, I'll go get it myself.
You know what? They're friends. They're always commentating. They're like, man, can you kick your brother's butt? Can you kick his butt? You know, man, you better watch out. Your sister's gonna kick your butt and stuff like that. You know, their friends are always joking around when I'm around and everything. But you know, they're real, real proud of me. They support me all the way. They're always there for me when I need them. And that's another thing that, you know, that's made me so successful in this sport as well, you know, because, you know, boxing is real, real hard. It's a lonely sport. And, you know, if you don't have your family support behind you, it gets even lonelier. And my brothers and my mom, my dad, they're real supportive.
That sounds great. 916 Chris, you got any more questions for Karina or Coach Rick?
Yeah, actually, I do have one more question for Karina. You mentioned Regina Helmick, I believe her name is, earlier.
Yeah, Regina.
In her second to last fight, she defeated Wendy Rodriguez, a fighter that you have your soul lost to, but the loss was on a technical decision to a cut. I was just curious, is that a fight that you'd like to get again, Wendy Rodriguez?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always wanted, you know, since day one, I wanted to fight her again, but you know what? They've offered her to fight me already at least 7 times, and every time she's turned it down. Either she got injured, or she felt that she wasn't ready. You know, just a bunch of excuses. So I kind of left that in the past. I mean, obviously, I would love for her to give me a rematch. I was actually supposed to fight her. My last fight that I had in February the 6th, I was scheduled to fight her, and for unknown reason, she claimed that she was injured. She told somebody that she hurt her lower back, then she told somebody that she hurt her shoulder, and then somebody else that she hurt her hand. So,
wow.
I really don't know, you know, what to believe now. But you know, definitely, I would love to, you know, have that fight, especially since that's my only loss that I have in my record, and unfortunately it was caused to a cut and it didn't get distance. So I would love to fight her, you know.
That's gotta sound, I mean, that sounds frustrating already. You know, when you can't get these fights that you want, and you know, wow, that's just too much. You know. I'm wondering, you know, for Rick, I'm wondering, is at any point in your guys' career, has it been discouraging to lace up the gloves and say, you know what, we're done?
Well, you know, that thought has occurred a couple of times, but, you know, Karina wants to be, you know, obviously she wants to make some money, but she... when she walks out of this, she wants to be known as one of the best female boxers out there, and pound for pound, and you know, and that's why she works real hard. And you know, and obviously she wants to. She's already won the 108 pound division. She wants to try to win the 112 and possibly the 115. You know, she wants to, you know, to go out there and walk out as one of the best females out there.
Absolutely, brothers. I appreciate you guys coming on, Karina Moreno, La Reina, out of Watsonville, coming on with us and leaving in the ring and talking to us about your guys' upcoming fight and also about the young lady that you guys are looking to get in the ring. I did mention that if you guys haven't seen any of her fights, you can go to my channel or you can go to my website. It'll be up later on tonight or first thing in the morning, and you guys can check out everything that she's done and her accomplishments and why she's, you know, the first female pound-for-pound fighter we've had on Leave It in the Ring, and there's a reason why we chose to have her on the radio with us. I appreciate
hey,
it again,
hey, Ruff,
guys.
Ruff.
Yeah,
let me ask
you
one more question. This is for fun right here. You know, you're a tremendous athlete and everything. You did kickboxing, boxing. Have you ever had to put any boyfriend straight, you know, put them in their place, let them know not to cross that line? No. I mean, because having a girl like you as a girlfriend would have to be something to think about, you know?
No, I haven't been able to. No, not yet. No.
You haven't been able to do it.
They treat her with a lot of respect.
That's good. That's, well, I'm pretty sure they do. I'm pretty sure they do. I've seen her, you know, get in there and mix it up, man. Well, once again, guys, I appreciate you guys coming on and chopping them up with us, and I can't wait for the next time we get on the line and talk about a little bit more, you know. So I wish you guys all the best of luck. Rick, I appreciate it. Karina Moreno,
thank you very much.
And, hopefully, I'll get to go take a cruise down to Watsonville to the family restaurant there and sit down for a torta or sope or something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right, thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, man, I mean, I got there, had the chance, and when she fought that girl Sharon Gaines, and I'm telling you, blood, I was at awe. That's how bad she is, you know. She was there, man, and she was just slipping and you know, coming back with shots and, you know, and really I was surprised that the girl, man, was able to, Sharon, was able to stand there and go toe-to-toe with her when she was always at the short of the combination. You know what I mean?
Ain't nothing better than a girl that could fight, boy. Get one like that by your side, you don't even need a gun in the house.
Absolutely, man. Hey, David Chen, let's go on a quick break real quick, man. Let's go on, tune into a song, and when we get back, we should hopefully have Virgil Hunt on the line to talk to us about his success against Edison Miranda.
All right, fellas, check out This Is Life featuring Young Tyson, and we'll be back after the break. Dave, did you check with Mr. Hunter to see if he's coming on?
No, I didn't. I didn't check. I don't know if he's. He should be calling in though.
Oh, all right. Sounds good.
See any new numbers up on the line at this moment?
No, but I do got the coach back. Coach on the line.
Coach Rick, how you doing, brother?
All right, brother. How you making out?
I'm making out fine, man. I'm over here in Sacktown. I just arrived over here for the Vicente Escobedo versus Kevin Flash Kelly I'm going to cover the fight over here. That's why I'm not controlling the switchboard today. I got my man, David Chen, from the press row, doing his thing. Got my boy, Blood. My boy, Blood, holding it down. Not the boy, my boy, Blood. My man, Blood.
Nah, I'm your boy, dog. I'm your boy. Always your boy, Blood. Your boy. Your nigga or your boy.
That's right. And then I got my pound for pound homeboy from out of Sacktown. I'm over here, you know, kicking dust in his side of the hood. 916 Chris, how you doing, brother?
It's good, man. I'm out here chilling, excited for some of this boxing news. I heard about a couple fights being made. Well, excited for one, not excited for the other, so I'm good.
Go ahead and break that down to me, brother. What are we talking about? Oh, wait, you know what? Before I get into that, I want to talk about here, Coach Rick, about his hand mitts, man, because I don't know if you guys have taken business to that. You know what? Hold on, okay? Hold on. Dave, go ahead and pick it up for me.
Yeah, Coach, why don't you tell everybody in your own words exactly the kind of work you do? Because we've all seen your videos, but we got a lot of listeners right now, so why don't you take this opportunity and tell them what you're about?
Oh, okay. Yeah, basically, I mean, what I do as far as my pad work, it's a spinoff from the work that you've seen Roger Mayweather do, Floyd, a little bit of Floyd Mayweather, and some of the other, you know, great trainers out there. What I've done is kind of put my own twist on it and put together a system that basically covers, in a 3-minute drill on the pads,
hello?
I cover everything. So, hello?
Yeah, my bad.
Oh,
it was Virgil on the... calling me another line. Anyways, if you guys haven't had a chance to take witness to Coach Rick over here, his hand mitts is phenomenal, man. I mean, it's something to, you know, memorize on, and you sit there and you really see the technique that a lot of kids need to kind of break down onto, you know. Hey, Coach, let me ask you this. Where do I pick up this DVD at the moment?
Right now, you can get a copy of it at standandfight.com. They actually, Art and those guys put together a little banner for me over there. You can get it there, and also over at worldofboxing.com. You can go right to it. The PayPal is up, and you can click right on it. $15, free shipping anywhere in the world. And basically, that's my basic technical mitt work DVD. And what that does, it for everybody or anyone that's seen my pad work, what that'll do is it's going to give you the fundamentals to get started on the technical mitt work that I do. And what I did was, in the middle of the video, is there's a particular pattern I use that kind of brings it all together, that pulls the entire drill together. And what I did in this first DVD is actually break that down piece by piece, punch by punch. So basically coaches, it's kind of a train-to-trainer type of thing. And also for the fighter on the other end, they can pick up the patterns. And basically my theory behind it is smooth is fast, fast is smooth. And when I, in theory, the idea is the smoother I can get my fighter with their movements, and when I say smooth, and that's in proper throwing their punches, jab, right hand, left hook, uppercuts, being able to slip, roll, counter, and being able to do that in a smooth fashion. What you'll see is you see the type of work similar to what Bernard Hopkins did, similar to what guys like Shane Mosley did. Shane, with the work of Rich Richardson, put together that smooth work, being able to roll the shoulder and counter and things like that. He was
absolutely
doing things I never saw him do before in the ring. And so the premise behind my pad work is basically to teach amateur and professionals that system of being able to get into the ring and be able to fight without really having to think through repetition. You know, 1,000 repetitions clinically proven to cause muscle memory. So if we do these repetitions enough times and we're doing things the right way, proper way, you know, a fighter can get in the ring, basically go out there, and he's going to react to what's coming at him, and he's going to, because of that, he's going to have time to be able to really think about what he wants to do in the ring. So that in a nutshell, basically covers what I do.
Absolutely. Speaking of a smooth operator at this moment, David Chen, can you please patch in Virgil Hunt?
You got it, brother. Area code 510, is this Mr. Hunter?
Yes, it is.
Man, right now we're talking about the smoothness of a trainer training a fighter how to be elusive. And obviously, Mr. Hunter, you have one of the most elusive fighters out there and really one of the guys that, you know, at the press conference you said something, man, that really, really just hit home with me. You know, because you know, you had a lot of press coming down on you guys talking about Hart and talking about Chin, and you pretty much shut the house down and what you said. Could you please kind of revise for all the listeners and all the young guys that are trying to come up into this really tough game and what you said that really put a pat on to the media or any fight fans about what the fight game really is about?
Well, in my opinion, the fight game is about hitting and not being hit. And I think this is something that really has to be instilled in young fighters. And I have a responsibility as a trainer. When you bring your son, your grandson, or your nephew to me, and he wants to be a boxer, and you expect the best like you would out of any coach in any sport, that I have the expertise to implement this into this young man. And I think it's very important. And I think that's one of the first and foremost things that should be mentally instilled, that you're here to hit and not be hit. And unfortunately, sometimes the game at the high end can get carried away because it's easier to explain, it's easier to detail a fight when you got two men going toe-to-toe. But my estimation of that is that there's a lack of skills and a lack of teaching somewhere. So hitting without being hit is first and foremost in my book.
Hey, Virgil, let me ask you this, man, you know, because, you know, a lot of times – fight fans or even the media, they want to see a fighter go out there and get all gutsy and take chances that are unnecessary just for their entertainment value alone. You know, and it seems to me you guys don't play that type of ball game. You guys stick to your game plan. You stick to what your guys' regimen, and that's the way it's pretty much going to be. Am I right about that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. I couldn't have my value as a coach if I couldn't keep a young man out of harm's way. And there's a way to entertain the crowd. There's a way to effectively meet your objective without putting yourself in. And I call it stupid harm's way. Anytime you're in that ring, you're in harm's way. But you should have been taught, and you should have the knowledge of how to minimize anything that could cause you considerable damage at that moment, and particularly later on in life. These men go home to their wives. They go home to their children. You know, after the bell sounds and the curtain closes and the cameras are shut off, you know, then the real world starts. So it would be inconceivable in my mind for me to know that I had a young man in my charge and that I couldn't minimize all the risk and dangers that are coming his way, and I'm calling myself a boxing trainer. As you know, this is the only sport in the world that nobody gets cut. No one gets cut in this sport. If you're not good enough in football, you get cut. If you're not good enough in baseball, you get cut. If you're not good enough in basketball, this is the only sport where a gentleman off the street, he can go to the commission and say, hey, look, you know, I'm a boxing trainer. Give me $50. Or a gentleman could be 35 years old, decides he wants to be a pro boxer. You know, give me $50. So it's a sport where everybody, nobody gets cut, and that's what causes the disparities in the sport quite a bit.
First, let me ask you, man, when you see a guy like a Floyd Mayweather step into the ring and he's really brass from the mouth, you know, this is a guy that, you know, will really attack anybody that asks him a question, or he has this image or persona of being a bad boy, is that something that you think that is appropriate, you know, knowing that, you know what, we don't need all this in the sport. There's other ways of promoting yourself.
Well, you know, I think Floyd has his way, as most fighters have their way. I think that the networks and the media, so to speak, they help create different personas in the fighters. Whether that is the real Floyd or not, I don't know. But it's not my way. I think that the game is really starving for a visual effect, not only to the fight fans, but fans in general, that, hey, you know, gentlemen are in the ring, and that when I step into that ring, I'm on another switch, and when I step out of it, I'm on another switch. And, you know, all the other sports, they have demands on their athletes and a code of conduct, how they're going to carry themselves and what is expected out of them. And, you know, in the NFL and the NBA, you have a dress code, you have a conduct code before you sign your contract. you have expectations because you're representing this league, and you know only a few can play in the National Football League or the NBA or Major League Baseball. So you're representing this league. You got kids looking up to you. You have parents who need this outside help in raising their families. A lot of times it's heroes that help raise kids and things, particularly boys and stuff. So I think that we owe it to the public in general to make sure that if we're in the fight game or any combat sport, that we have a code of conduct that we adhere to, and we want to make sure that it's effective and that we don't have to play this persona that the media puts on us in order for us to be effective or sell tickets.
You think that's, you know, with the persona like we're talking about right now, you know, the whole, hey, if you're not out of the ghetto or you know, you don't have a homeboy that got shot on the block or you didn't sell dope on the quarters, to me, it seems like if you have that type of storyline, you seem to just to trail up a lot faster than the skills themselves, because the skills should really make you go up on top, not your background.
I believe that to be very true, as I indicated at the press conference and some before that. You know, I get very, very tired of, you know, particularly minority fighters, that they have to be projected in a way that the media is comfortable in interacting with them, that, you know, when they do a personal story on them and everything, you know, we got to go down in the hood and, you know, I lived here and three guys got shot across the street over there. You know, the dope house was around the corner, and if it wasn't for boxing, I'd be dead. And, you know, who wants to hear that all the time? But it seems like that's the only way that, you know, minority fighters in particular can be reached out to, you know. But when you come see Verg, when you come see Andre and everything, you know, I like to show you my favorite coffee shop. I like to show you where I take walks. And, you know, these are things that we've all gone through, but we like to leave them behind because, you know, we're not living in it has happened. We're living in what's happening.
Absolutely. My co-host, Blood, I know you got a question, brother. Go ahead and ask Mr. Virgil Hunt.
Yes, sir. I hear everything you're saying, and I think it's very important, some of the things you just covered. You gave us some input on keeping a fighter out of harm's way inside of the ring. How important is it that you keep a fighter out of harm's way outside of the ring with these streets, with crime, and with a lot of – with them getting the newfound success? A lot of people want to be around them, and sometimes it's the wrong people. How do you instill that in your fighters to keep them away from that kind of stuff, the negative?
Well, I believe first and foremost, he has to have character from the beginning. And if his character is not completed, he has to have some sort of root of character and integrity. You know, I like to meet the fighter's parents. I like to meet his girlfriend, his associates, his friends, what high school he went to, what neighborhood he came from, you know, his belief systems on certain things, his thought process on certain things. And then, you know, taking it, pure examples that's right before his eyes to educate him on the do's and don'ts of not only the fight game but of the world, and things that could deter him from his ambitions in the game, things that could take him down and cause him a lot of pain, sorrow, difficulty, and what have you, and give him a vision of success, and both of us work towards that vision.
So basically you're saying that there's strengths within every person, and it's best to work towards the strengths and the positive, and then kind of just keep them out of harm's way and work off the strengths, basically you're saying.
Exactly. I believe so, and it's so important that those who are in charge of individuals or those who have somewhat of a forefront position in individuals, so important in how we carry ourselves. In other words, we're walking what we're talking. And I believe all young men and young women want to be a success. I believe everybody that enters the ring, they didn't enter the ring just for the fun of it. They entered the ring for the potential of success. So I believe that success is instilled in all of us and that we want the better things in life. But unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of things that, you know, success breeds that, you know, we're shown the other side of success, you know, from the materialistic point of view, from the sexual point of view, and we can get caught in the trappings of those things, you know, particularly, like you said earlier, if we surround ourselves with individuals who are about that. But it's very important who you surround yourself with, and it's very important that you surround yourself with people who are on the same page that you are and have the same ambitions that you are, whether they're a fighter or not, but they have the same ambitions of getting ahead in life, doing positive things in life, and making something out of their lives.
Do you believe that the media tends to they tend to focus more on the negative aspects of the fighter? Like you said earlier, we see these shows on HBO pre-show where it's about where they're from, the ghetto, and the media. Do you think they tend to focus on the negative when it comes to boxing, especially boxing?
Well, you know, I think they do, but at the same time, I don't think it's all their fault. I think what, you know, when you go back into the 40s and the 50s in the fight game, you know, each newspaper had a fight writer. Each newspaper had a beat writer. And so, you know, these gentlemen were spending a lot of times in the gym. They were spending a lot of times on the paths and the streets and the byways where the fighter was going. So it became more of a personal relationship as opposed to a surface relationship. And yes, negativity, particularly in the fight game, reaches the headlines much quicker than something positive. You know, if Andre went out and beat his wife tonight and slapped somebody at the grocery store, you can bet it's gonna make front page news.
Yes,
if he went to the Boys and Girls Club and he presented a couple of scholarships, you'd have to dig up a reporter to report that. So I think in boxing, in particular, since it is pretty much dominated by minorities, I think that this is the only thing sometimes that the media gets comfortable with. Not all the media, but the majority of them. So we're hoping for a change, and we're hoping for more understanding, and we're hoping for more coverage on the positive things that people do in their lives.
Hey, Bruce, let me ask you this. You know, coming out of the Olympics after 2004, you know, and not right away. You guys kind of just held back and just looked at the field that was out there and really took your time in picking at whatever you guys wanted to do. You know, do you feel that some people were merely upset with you guys because they wanted you to move at a pace of what they wanted and not what you guys wanted?
You know, I think so in some instances and not all instances. And I think it's important that anybody who has a young charge coming out of that amateur system, particularly if you were very successful in it, is that you do have to pave your way. I mean, it would be unfair to me to take a young man who just turned 20 years old and not give him an opportunity in a division such as the middleweight division to be able to mature into a man and to take his time and get a good grasp and an understanding of the game. And, yes, I believe we could have put him on the fast track and he possibly could have had a title by now. But, you know, in the middleweight division, you don't see people winning titles after 2 and 3 years. I think it took Jermaine 6 years before he got out, because it took Kelly Pavlik 7 years. This is a division where you got a man that can knock out a heavyweight, and at the same time he has the quickness and speed of a bantamweight. So it's a particularly dangerous division. You know, we've had a couple that have tried it, and we see what happened to them. Their careers are cut short, namely David Reed, Fernando Vargas. It's a division that you want to take your time with, to respect the game. You want to learn the game in and out. And then when you make your move, when you take your first step up, that first step is not just to conquer that opponent that's there at the media time, but it's to conquer the whole division, and we're ready for that now.
Absolutely. You know, I'm definitely going to let some other people, you know, ask some questions, guys. So I know I'm hogging up Mr. Virgil Hunt, but it's like speaking to an uncle. You know what I mean? When I heard Virgil speak, I was like, I sat there, and I was like, damn, you know what I mean? He had me going. So,
yeah.
But I got one more question for you, brother, you know, and
sure.
I really greatly appreciate you calling in such an early note. I mean, late notice, you know, I called you up right away and, you know, you didn't have to do this. You took some time out of your day to chop it up with us hardcore boxing fans. But let me ask you, you know, right now people are talking about now for you guys to go after a Carl Froch. Does that kind of make you guys go like, Carl Froch, I mean, are there not better other oppositions out there for you guys that would be a far more dangerous test out there? Or do you guys think of, hey, you know what, why not go after Kelly Pavlik, take the middleweight division, and then come back and go and then dominate the 168?
Well, for one thing, we can't make 160. So that's out of it. He can't make 160 anymore. And another thing, we don't want to minimize Carl Frock's accomplishments and his achievements in the ring. After all, he is an undefeated fighter. He showed.
I'm not minimizing this. His accomplishments.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm not minimizing. But in all honesty, do you guys sit there and go, yeah, I mean, he's to me, in my opinion, and I might be wrong about this, but he's a mirror image of Miranda. And he's a one-handed fighter. He's a tug-along, strong guy. But it's going to be the replica of what happened on Saturday night when Ward stepped into the ring and pretty much had a one-sided fight.
Well, he has the belt, so we can't look at his style in the sense of who he's going to be or who he might be. The fact is that he has the belt. He has something that we want. And by us being his mandatory, we intend to exercise that right. So we don't, you know, Carl Frock fighting Jermaine Taylor won't be the same Carl Frock fighting Andre Ward. You know, we have to keep in mind that because I looked a certain way against this guy doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to look a certain way against you. He's a dangerous fighter. His record indicates that. He's indicated that he will fight from the beginning to the end, that he won't give up. And this fight in particular has proved a lot to him, who he is and what he's about. And one thing that they did give him, if it didn't give him anything else, is, hey, I'm going to keep on going until the end because you never know what can happen. And when you have a fighter who's experienced that and been through that, that's a dangerous opponent. So we have to keep that in mind, and we cannot minimize him at all. We have to take him very serious.
Absolutely. Go ahead, David Chen, and open up the panel so for some people to call in and ask him questions.
Coach Hunter, I like a lot of the stuff that you had to say about this. But regarding Andre Ward, in his fight at the end in the interview, you know, he's the first guy that's going to admit when he's not happy with part of his fight game that he's saying he needs improvement. He'll admit that before anybody else is going to question him on it. Now, he got hit a few times in that fight, and it wasn't too much trouble. He recovered well. But what do you think in terms of defensively is when he is at his weakest? You see what I mean? Because he's kind of a movement-based fighter. Like, when is he at his most vulnerable that he can get caught like that, and you know, something you guys can work on in the future?
Well, as soon as you step in the ring, you're vulnerable. As soon as you start throwing punches, you're vulnerable. So I think if we're talking about a couple of the right hands that he took in, I've already discussed that. I think he kept his feet in place. He tried to roll the punch, and he didn't move his feet. So, you know, one thing about Miranda that most people didn't realize, but we realized, is his defense is underrated and his speed is underrated. That's something that we took very serious. He has very long arms. He fights out of a crouch. So there are times and moments in the ring that he could get a good beat on you. So we wanted to keep that in mind. But the couple of times that he got hit flush, I looked at the fight, and I think he only got hit solid four times, and he got hit a total of nine times. So that's phenomenal. That's way more than you can ask of a fighter from a defensive perspective. I mean, Andre's defense is superb, and really I believe is second to none. He's extremely difficult to hit, and he's extremely difficult to get a good beat on. So in that respect, as far as the count, I'm very happy about it. As far as technique-wise, he didn't move his feet a half a foot, which would have cut that in half or cut it completely out. So that's something that we go back and that we work on, most definitely.
916, Chris, go ahead and ask your question, brother.
Yeah. After the fight, it was reported that something midway through the fight, I think, was taken from Edison Miranda's corner. I don't know what it was, a substance, something maybe in the bottle they were or something. I don't know exactly what it was going on there. Do you have any insight on what that is and what you might think that be and who brought that up?
Well, we had people in the corner. Yeah, as you know, this is professional boxing. And when you look at that fight, Miranda had to win that fight if he wanted to remain in the picture, so to speak. He had a tremendous amount of pressure to win that fight. And we cannot underestimate what the lengths people are willing to go to ensure an edge, an advantage, and anything. So we didn't leave anything to chance. So we had two people in the corner watching his corner. You know, you got one official and you got four men in the corner, and that official is pretty much programmed to watch the trainer and maybe the cut man and the fighter. But it's been my experience to know that all men who are officials, just because they have the title official and they have an official jacket on, doesn't mean that they're truly officials. And, you know, you learn that from the Margarito situation, and you learn it from other situations. So you can't leave anything to chance. From my understanding, it was they tested and found a stimulant. They're going to identify the stimulant over the next few days, I guess, and then, you know, they'll go from there.
To follow up on that real quick, what do you think, okay, let's say that he, you know, it comes back that he did use something or he was doing something illegal, what do you think the punishment should be for Miranda?
Well, first of all, you know, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Did he know anything about it? I don't know if you were in the press conference after the fight. I did say that this was a different Edison Miranda, that I hadn't seen that Edison Miranda before in terms of his energy, in terms of his determination. I don't know if you heard me say that, but I did say that. But at the same time, we don't know if Edison Miranda knew that this was going on. I mean, there are a lot of things that go on in boxing that is oblivious to the fighter. I would think that based on some of the things that he has said outside of his trash talking and some of the things that he came into the locker dressing room and said after the fight, I take him to be a compassionate man and a man of humanity. And I know that the networks created a persona for him that he feels that he has to live up to in order to get recognized. He admitted that himself through conversation. So we can't say he knew about it, you know, and I think that's the million-dollar question. But we know his corner knew about it because they had it. So we'll just have to take it from there.
All right, one last thing in regards to, you know, you said that, you know, sometimes a fighter doesn't know what a trainer is doing and whatnot, and I could, you know, understand that position. In regards to that, though, you know, with the Margarito situation, I know it's kind of being a dead horse, but he said he didn't really know what was going on with the hand wraps, you know, and a lot of people are saying that, you know, he did. From that, from your perspective, you know, would a fighter know for sure that something illegal was being applied to his hand wraps?
Well, you know, in Antonio Margarito's case, that was a visual situation. In the Miranda's case, it's an oral situation. So you have two different perspectives of it. I mean, you know what's going on in your hands. You're feeling this. You're feeling, not to say that if they were giving him something, if he knew about it, then I'm sure he was expecting a certain feeling, particularly if they had some trial runs with it. You know, if they were doing it in sparring, if they were doing it, you know, in training and leading up to the fight, and he knew about it, then I'm sure he expected a particular feeling to come up on him. But if he didn't know about it, I don't know if, other than just feeling good that night, if he would be able to say, well, I feel good, you must be giving me something out of this bottle or out of this corner. That's the million-dollar question as far as Antonio Margarito. That was a visual thing. He knew what was going on his hands, and he knew he could see and feel and know the difference. But he said he didn't, and it's just so deep you really can't speculate. I mean, maybe he sits there and just goes along with the program. Maybe he doesn't touch his pads, and that could be understandable. If you really wanted to dissect it down, it could be very understandable that, hey, I have no interest at all in my pads. My trainer wraps my hands. He's wrapped my hands hundreds of times before. It's a routine that's just every day with me. So why would I be paying so close attention to what's going on my hands when I do this day in and day out? So, I mean, you still have to. So you do have to give Margarito the benefit of the doubt if he said he didn't know.
Absolutely. David Chen, we got any other callers right now for Mr. Virgil Hunt?
No, sir. We're here right now, brother.
I got a question for you, Virgil.
Yeah.
You know, Ward did something in there that a lot of people recognize that he's never done. Inside fighting. Is that something you guys worked in the gym? Was it one of your guys' was it on the script of your guys' game plan, or did Ward just do that on his own, and was it heart stopping for you for some moments for him to do something that was out of the ordinary that he's never done?
No, Andre has a lot more things that he can do that he just hasn't shown it yet. It hasn't been necessary to show, and that's what's so good for me and good for him. We know we have a lot more to bring to the table that the fight world has no idea that he could do. Before he was a boxer, he was a fighter, and he was taught, he was a fighter in the beginning of his career, his first 40, 50 amateur fights. He'd blast right out the corner and attack you like a wild dog. But that's something that we knew that we were going to have to refine, and we knew that in order for him to go far in this business that he was going to have to learn how to box. And so he learned how to box, but fighting is second nature to him. He just hasn't had to exhibit it. He's very comfortable on the inside. I believe he has the best inside game in the middleweight or super middleweight division. It's just that the boxing world is just now seeing that. But when you look at the skill of his in fighting, that just didn't show up. That's been there for a while. When you look at the skill of it and how he administered it and how he applied it, that's been there for years. It's just that, you know, that fight, that particular fight, we felt the need to let him know that, hey, we are the strongest middleweight in the division. Physically, there's no middleweight stronger than him. And, you know, the public, they found out. I mean, in the boxing world found out that, you know, they've always misread Andre until they get into the ring with him. We're talking about a kid who hasn't lost a fight since he was 12. We're talking about a kid nobody's ever asked a rematch for. We're talking about a kid nobody's ever even called us, asked us for sparring. So we know who we are, and we don't have to go around blowing our horns and tooting our horns and proving it to the public. We prove it in the ring. So the infighting was something that he's been doing for years and something that he happens to be very skilled at.
You know, Virgil, obviously Carl Frosch's got the bout, and that's probably the fight that you guys are looking at. But what fight for you guys personally for a defining moment to you know, go to the next level in career-wise, what is the fight out there for you guys that would take it, you know, take you guys to that next level?
I think more important than the fight is unifying the division. And I think that that's a very, very realistic goal, and that's a goal that keep us going for the days and weeks and months and years ahead. At this point, we don't have any preference. If any of the champions step to the plate and offers the fight, we would take that fight from Miguel Kessler on down. So it's title shot time now. So we're not discriminating and hand-picking and anything. We're saying, hey, we're here. You want to step to the plate, we're ready. It doesn't make a difference if it's Frosch, Butte, Kessler, or the other gentleman. It doesn't make a difference.
Real quick, I still got my man Grind Shine from Erico 909 on the line. Grind,
yeah.
Anything you would like to fire off at Coach Virgil Hunter?
Yeah. What's going on, Coach Hunter? How's it going? Yeah,
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah. You know, the fight, you know, everybody's been seeing Andre, you know, he looks like another version of Roy Jones, fast hands, good uppercut. I mean, he's a well-rounded fighter. Now, a lot of people would like to see him against Carl Frosch or Mikael Kessler, and basically everybody think he can take them both with no problem, and I really do believe that because I think that it's not about how many fighters you fought. It's the skill set you bring in. It's what you're doing with your time, and even though his career is going slow, I still think he possesses the skills to beat Miguel Kessler and Butte and all of them easily. I mean, the only one I think that's a serious threat out of all of them is Miguel Kessler because of his record and him fighting Joe Calzacchi and him having that type of experience. But besides that, Carl Frosch wants to probably fight him, but I don't see Frosch possessing the skills like he did against Jermaine Taylor. Now, Jermaine Taylor was average. He was losing the skill more and more, but I think Andre Ward is just a different type of fighter all the way around for the likes of Carl Frosch. Do you think Ward will be ready to fight him soon, or Mikael Kessler?
Well, again, whoever steps to the plate, be it Frosch or Kessler, we have no preference.
Okay.
And each one presents their own unique challenge, and it's definitely a fight that we would have to prepare very seriously for. And when the moment in time comes, we have to be ready for that moment in time. But again, to reiterate one over the other, we're not looking at it that way. We're looking at the opportunity to fight for the belt. Quite, you're right. Kessler has the name. I think that if you had to single out one guy to be, you know, the dominant figure in the division, you have to start with Miguel Kessler. He only lost to Joe Calzaghe. It was a good fight for him. He's shown excellent skills and dominance up to that point, and he seems to have rebounded from that. So he definitely would have to be considered the top guy in the division.
Okay. You think that fight would materialize, though, Virgil? I mean, he really hasn't shown any interest of coming back to the States or really challenging anybody else that's a threat to him at this moment, ever since losing to Joe Calzaghe.
Well, you know, he makes good money over there in Denmark. He draws a crowd. He's comfortable there, and you know, let's remember now, it's prize fighting, not pride fighting. So, you know, first and foremost, he's fighting for money. So you know, business sense, business wise, he has to do the best thing for him, and fighting in his home, in his home country and in his hometown there. That gives him a lot of advantages, and it's something that we would even have to think about to go way over there across the water to fight him for the title. You know, those are very deep and serious considerations that we would really be concerned with. So, and unfortunately, all the champions are across the water. You know, Butte's across the border, so
right.
But they're not here in the States. So, and each one of them brings to the table a fan base. So in order to entice them out of their comfort zone and their nest, you know, we're dependent on the city of Oakland to back us up, to keep putting 11, 12, 13,000 there. And we're hoping that his name is enough and the threat of his ability is enough that the public demands that they step out of their comfort zone and come meet us in the United States. It's a fight that I think the people of the United States deserve. Be it in Oakland, be it in Vegas or somewhere, but definitely a fight that they deserve.
We also got Coach Rick on the line. Coach Rick, do you have anything for Coach Hunter?
Yeah, real quick, Coach Hunter, first off, just want to congratulate you and of course, Andre Ward on a tremendous fight against Miranda. Was very, very impressed. Yes, I was very impressed with the fight. I got to tell you, I hadn't really been following Andre Ward's career. I had seen a few of his fights a little while back, and I sat down and watched his fight, and I had seen Miranda fight before, and I knew what he was going to bring to the table. He's a tough guy. He's a puncher, and I wanted to see how Andre would react to that type of pressure, and I got to tell you, he showed poise, especially getting cut early in the fight, showed tremendous poise, and I watched how he just skillfully put together an attack and put together one of my like favorite moves that I showed to some of my fighters. In the second round, it was the latter part of the second round, and Miranda was pressing. If he came out the clinch, and it was a jab to the stomach, beautiful right hand, and he slid off to the right with a perfect left hook. It just split the guard, and the bell rang. And from there, it was, for me, it just seemed like it was going to be a downhill battle for Miranda because, you know, Ward came out and just tactically took him apart for the rest of the fight. He did a tremendous job, and that you know, goes without saying that that has a lot to do with not only the talent that comes with the fighter, but the coach himself. So congratulations to both of you, and really looking forward to seeing him fight for a title and move on from there.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it very much.
Bloody, we're going to take a quick caller from 339, if we have time. Caller from 339 area code. You want to state your name? You have anything to say to Mr. Hunter?
339, go ahead.
We lost 339. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, you know, we obviously got to let Mr. Virgil Hunt get back to his business. He's at the gym. He's, you know, obviously he's working. Blood, if you have one more question, brother, go ahead and ask him the last question, and then we're going to have to let him go.
Yes, sir. If given the chance, would he move up to the light heavyweight division and take one of the big fights up there if given the chance at this stage?
You know, I think at some stage he's going to grow into a light heavyweight before it's all over. You know, we got our hands crossed. Hope we grow into a heavyweight. You know, Joe Lewis only weighed 205, I believe it was. But, you know, that's far-fetched thinking. But I do have the gut feeling that he'll grow into a light heavyweight, you know, within the next 3 to 4 years. As far as the competition up there, you know, at a catch weight fight and everything, again, it's prize fighting, not pride fighting. So it has to make business sense, financial sense, and also, you know, he has a fair shake of winning the fight. And right now, I think he can compete with anybody in the light heavyweight division at a catch weight.
Okay. Absolutely, Virgil. You know, I appreciate it, man. You know, we've had a mutual friend, a really good friend of mine, and was a
really
good friend of yours by the name of Don Butch Collins. You know, rest in peace, man.
Oh, my man. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, he said, always get on me, like, yo, man, I'm telling you, these guys are legit. And I was not a believer. I got to admit, I was not a believer until later on in your guys' career. You have slowly have turned me into a fan. And in meeting you personally, having you on the radio, I'm sold, man, completely, you know. And Butch had all your guys' fights, you know, and I bought all your guys' fights because Butch was such a good salesman, you know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you know that,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you know, I still sometimes just shake my head on that whole situation. You know, he 2 weeks before he demised, he actually called me and was asking me some questions. I thought he was the FBI. He was asking me about my address and this, that, and the other. He said, if something happens to me, I want to make sure that you get my fight collection. And
right.
I'm just, okay, man, whatever, you know. And we went to St. Lucia to fight Roger Cantrell. And when I got back, I got the news. It just literally blew me off of my feet. I mean, it was just something that took me a long time to grasp and handle. It blew me away. And, you know, I know his mother and I know his father. And we've been in contact, and it was just an unfortunate thing that just, you know, it was just something you can't even describe. Words can't describe it.
Absolutely, man. You know, Butch was one of my very, very good friends, and he was a fight fanatic just like the way I am.
Yes,
and we would have 2 to 3 hours of just talking and arguing about the fight game.
You
and,
too, huh?
Yeah, oh, man, you know, sometimes I couldn't get Butch off the line, you know. And he would come down, and we'd go to the gym together, man, and really, truly good friend. But Mr. Virgil Hunt, I greatly appreciate you getting online with us, man. And it was
pleasure,
you know, listening to you. Like I said, man, you know, I even told Blood, it was like listening to an uncle just schooling us and putting us straight.
Well, I appreciate it any time, gentlemen.
Thank
you
very much.
You guys hanging there, and you guys keep the game alive. You seem like you're representing it from a real positive standpoint, and anything that we can do to continue to enhance what you're trying to do, we got your back. So you guys hang in there.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you very much. There you go, guys, Mr. Joe Hunt.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you, Coach.
Well, guys, man, that was pretty good. You know, like I said, we've had a mutual friend, my friend Butch, rest in peace. He died. He had a very rare disease in his brain, and he passed away, man, at a very young age, 35, left three kids behind and a wife, a lovely wife. And, man, it was something that, you know, if you knew me personally, it was something that hit me hard. I mean, it hit me real hard where, you know, I kind of shelled up for a couple of months because this is a dude that I would chop it up. And literally, we would watch the fight game together. This was my boxing buddy. And he's actually one of the reasons why I started getting, like, on YouTube and started up a fight show, because he was the last of the Mohican, you know what I mean? Out of my homeboys that really watched the game, that had knowledge of the game, where we could literally chop it up. So, you know, this was dedicated to this having here, having an interview with Virgil Hunt was dedicated to my brother, who's up there, man, in the boxing heaven, Don Butch Collins. So,
you got it, man.
So, brothers, I'm going to let you guys go. Go ahead and continue with the show. I'm here in Sacramento, and I got to go in and get my credentials, and sit down and enjoy myself a couple of fights and then get back to the rest of you all and let you know how it all went down.
Absolutely, Dave. You enjoy yourself.
All right, guys. Blood, brother, my boy, my ace.
I will holler at you, bro. Get you a drink.
Yeah, I will. I will. You know, Coach Rick, before you guys, hopefully Coach Rick is still on the line. Have him please give out the address and the number of where anybody can pick up this phenomenal DVD, because you got to see this DVD. I'm going to put it up on my website. I know I've been promising I'm going to do it, but I've been falling behind, man.
I've
been really, really
brother.
Busy. I'm going to do it, man, because
you got me, brother.
I really, really, truly believe a lot of kids, if you're going to get into the fight game, you got to watch what Coach Rick does, because it's just something, man, that really should belong in your arsenal if you decide to step into the ring. You know, you got to have this defense. You got to have type of knowledge. You know, you gotta understand the fight game. And really, honestly, the truthful of this, the DVD, is you're going to be able to pick a real trainer by watching Coach Rick. Because when you go to a gym and you ask that trainer, hey, do you know this move here, and he does not know what you're talking about, guess what? Get out of that gym, because he's more or less is not a real, real coach. Anyways, brothers, I appreciate everybody that called in, you know, and that supports the fight show. Grindshine, thank you for calling in. David Chen, you know, Chris 916, my brother, you know, Blood, everybody, Rob Rilla, where you at? You know, shout out to Guard Your Grill, shout out to the 17 Brandon, Buddha Side, the whole works, man. All right, brothers, I'm my foot's in the door. I'm out.
Who'd you got, Dave?
Nice.
You know, guys, there's like something we were talking about earlier that I wanted to keep it going a little bit, but we were talking about the Marquez and Mayweather press conference, right? Now, I saw the press conference, and it went pretty well, but it got funny when Mayweather got on ESPN and talked to Brian Kenny. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Now,
I didn't catch it, but go ahead.
Yeah, basically what happens is Brian Kenny was asking Mayweather all the tough questions, like, why don't you fight Mosley? These are some of the things people are saying, you know, how can you consider yourself good if you take your time off? You know, hard stuff like that, And Mayweather had his well-prepared answers, but half the time he just said, well, I'm talking to Brian Kenny, a man who's never put on a pair of gloves and doesn't know anything about boxing, so I don't really need to answer this question. So, like, what are you guys' impression of, like, that whole press conference? You know, what kind of vibe did it give you about the fight? Blood, you want to start?
Yeah, man, I just thought that, once again, you know, that's why you got to remember who's coming to see your fights, who's paying to see your fights. Most of the people who are paying to see your fights, who are putting their hard-earned money into watching you fight, have never put on gloves.
Exactly.
You're not questioning us when we come in to spend our money to watch you fight. So if I'm going to spend my $50 to watch you fight, bro, I at least want to know why you ain't fighting so-and-so and so-and-so. You just want me to just go ahead and give you my money, and your excuse is that, I mean, it's just like if some, I mean, this is a bad example, but if somebody goes to buy something, like, I don't know, man, I don't want to get into it. It just makes me mad to hear Mayweather once again dance his way around questions, man, and he wants to use experience as a factor. What, we don't have the right to ask you a question because we ain't ever put on gloves? Come on, that's bull. Y'all know that.
Now, blood, I got to say this, because I'm listening to what Mayweather has to say, and he's a really smart dude. He prepares all his answers to all the situations that you might put him in, and one of the ways he does this is he answers questions in a way that there's really no way for you to pick apart his logic. There's really no way for you to follow up and prove him wrong. For example, when he was asked why he's not fighting the winner of Cotto and Clowdy, why he's not fighting Mosley, who's a welterweight champion right now, I mean, the answer he gave is, hey, I don't have anything to prove anymore. You know, he's fought a lot of the top people at welterweight, junior welterweight. I mean, you can make a case about that, but that's what he said. You see what I mean? He's saying this to make his logic foolproof.
Yeah, but
he said, I got nothing left to prove, and all he needs to do is fight these big money fights, and Marquez is a big thing that everybody wants to see, so it's kind of hard for you to follow up on something like that. You see what I mean?
I disagree. I don't think it's really hard to follow up on something like that, man. I mean, you know, are you going to – I mean, we still going to have those questions. He's proved everything to himself, but he ain't proved nothing to the people who are spending their money to watch him fight. He ain't proved nothing to us yet. You know, I mean, he might have proved it to himself. And if that's how he wants to go out in his career, then, and he feels good within himself, then that's fine. But his legacy will always be questioned down the line.
Chris, from Sacramento, what do you think about what like Mayweather was saying in both the press conference and with Brian Kenny, man?
You know, I got to admit, I haven't got to see the Brian Kenny interview. I got to think Brian China. I know he uploaded it and sent it to me. I'm going to check that out after the show. But
No problem.
Brian Kenny is like, he's kind of like he's had these confrontational interviews with Floyd in the past, you know, because he's been one of the few reporters that hasn't been afraid to, pardon my French, but get Mayweather's ass, you know, when it comes to these interviews, you know, to give him the hard questions, you know. And I'm glad, you know, that he does that because, you know, a lot of people just accept Mayweather's answers, you know, and kind of just take his reasoning. And Brian Kenny, you know, he's like us, you know, he kind of isn't afraid to get to the bottom of, you know, really question him and give him the hard stuff, you know. So, I mean, Floyd, that's his point of view and whatnot, you know, but there's another thing, you know, sometimes Floyd Mayweather kind of comes across as one of those guys where he's a loudmouth, but at times I've heard people say that he's kind of insecure, you know. I don't know if that's the truth or not, but, you know, with someone that's an insecure person, you know, they're real loud, you know, but they're willing to take fights that, you know, they can win, that they kind of assure they can win, but they don't really go out there and face the real, real hard challenges, you know, because maybe they have their own doubts, you know, in their own mind, you know, whether they're willing to admit it or not, but maybe that's just their own defense mechanism, you know, not taking those hard fights out there, you know, because they're maybe inside they're really have questions about themselves whether or not they can win them.
Yes, sir.
Now, I got a question for Grind. Now, we saw how recently more and more news coming out, and it seems like the chips are more and more stacked against Marquez. You know, now they're saying that Floyd Mayweather on the night of the fight is allowed to weigh as a proper welterweight. So now it's actually going to be a proper welterweight fight. It's not even going to be 143, 144. Floyd can weigh his proper 147 and fight against Marquez. Grind, do you have any thoughts on this, man?
Man, Floyd, you know what? You know, first of all, you know, Floyd does anything he wants because he's making that money. This is why everybody fell in love with Floyd Mayweather, you know, to stick on the subject. When he first came, he was humble, and everybody fell in love with his style of fighting. It wasn't really about his mouth, but now since time has went on, he's got real, real cocky of the more money he's made. He doesn't think any fighter as good as him or anybody should be fighting besides him. He does not give Pacquiao any props. He doesn't give any fighter any props. He doesn't want to give you two props until you beat you, and I think that's wrong. He should be fighting himself if that's the case, and blood is right. If I'm going to pay $50 for the fight, I think I should be able to ask you a question. And you know what? Another thing, Mayweather is scary. Mayweather doesn't want to answer the real questions that people have to ask him. Why, if you really wanted to sell your legacy, why you didn't fight Margarito? Why you didn't fight Cotto? Why you didn't fight Clotty? Why you didn't fight Shane Mosley? That would have set your career, and nobody would have asked any questions no more. Now that everybody's talking about Pacquiao and the steam is going to Pacquiao now, he wants to get mad and say, well, I'm still number one. Well, you should have never left. You say, well, I didn't have any money problems, but they put a $6 million lien on your house. That's a lie. You say you have all this money, Mayweather promotions, but you're coming back to fight. You say before you left that boxes, nobody in boxing interests you to fight. Mayweather, he goes around and questions. Brian Kenny has two confrontations with him. He told Larry Merchant the same thing. You don't know nothing about boxing. You never laced up gloves. He tells it to everybody. Why should I fight Shane Mosley? He has five losses. I can beat him five ways. Mayweather has the same tune every time. Mayweather has got big-headed, and about time somebody's going to beat him this time. And he doesn't know, Pacquiao's not a Baldemir that he's fighting, and he just got a name for himself. Pacquiao's the real deal, and he's mad about it. He's mad about this dude really has some shine, and he doesn't think anybody's not a great fighter like him. He doesn't give anybody any props, and that's why he's going to fall one day. I'm telling you, the fall is coming soon for Mayweather. It's only a matter of time. Mayweather's bill will be bankrupt by the age of 40 because the way he spends his money. He's coming back already from money problems, and guaranteed you cannot treat people that way and be like this for the rest of your life. They all fall, and that's my opinion.
A lot of tough love for Mayweather. Now, a common theme for this fight, you know, like, no matter what we say, you know, Mark, you know, yes, Mayweather, he's getting all this tough talk because he does make excuses. You know, he doesn't do the things the way we want him to do. That, you know, that's all well and good, but the fact of the matter is he is going to be fighting Marquez come, you know, July 18th, and And Marquez, you know, I think he is a good fighter, obviously, but he is in the, you know, he is in a disadvantage in this fight. You know, something people seem to forget because there's all this aura about him. You know, he's the most scientifically adept fighter in the ring. His ring IQ
right.
is off the charts. He's a great counterpuncher. But I think people mistake that for his defense. You know, a lot of people think that he's gonna be okay. But one thing Marquez has always been is very hittable. You know, he's not a very mobile guy. What he does is he's a warrior. He hits you back for trying to hurt him. But can he really trade like that with Mayweather over the rounds and get the better of it, Coach Rick? I mean, what do you think about this in terms of fighter styles from your experience?
Well, I got to tell you, I hope Floyd really packs a lunch for this fight because outside of the slight difference in size, Marquez is a tremendous fighter. He's a tremendous technical fighter. And
Absolutely.
The thing is, how many times has he been down in his career? I mean, yeah, he gets hit, but let's just go back to the Diaz fight, what he did to Diaz. And Diaz was bringing it. And I'm not saying that Diaz was necessarily a puncher, but physically Diaz was the quote-unquote bigger guy. And you saw what he did. He technically took him apart. He adjusted. And he knows what to do. He's not going to headhunt Mayweather. He's not going to come out there because he knows Mayweather pulls, bends, and rolls. He knows that. Everybody knows that. So what he's going to do, he's going to come out there and he's going to attack that body the way Mexican fighters do, and he's going to make Floyd fight. And when Floyd has to fight, Floyd gets hit. So when you throw punches, it's just inevitable. You're going to get hit. So if he's going to press the action, and I really believe that there's going to be a lot of people surprised on the 18th. And I'm not taking anything away from Floyd. I think he's a great fighter. He deserved that pound-for-pound crown when he, you know, up until he retired. But Marquez showed, even against Pacquiao, that he's the real deal. This guy is the real deal. He showed it on his last two fights, beating Casamayor, stopping Casamayor, stopping Diaz to get to this fight. So, you know, guys are underestimating him, saying he's a smaller guy. But a puncher is a puncher. You could be 105 pounds. If a guy can punch, he's going to knock somebody out, even if they're 200 pounds. And Marquez is a puncher. And he, like I said, he brings the technical skills to match. So I think there's going to be a little more to this fight than what some of the critics out there and the fans are thinking is going to happen.
Definitely. Marquez's strength is definitely something to be looking out for in this fight. I actually tend to personally believe that he might be a little bit stronger than Floyd. But, hey, that's neither here nor there, and we'll see how it turns out. We only got a couple minutes left. Coach Rick, why don't you tell everybody real quick how they can get a hold of your DVD when it comes out, all that good stuff, real quick for us.
Oh, yeah, real quick. Again, like Dave was saying, it's going to be up on There Will Be Blood's Fight Show website that's coming up soon. Right now it's available at standandfight.com and also at worldboxing.com. And if anybody wants to just take a look at some of the work that I do, you can check out my YouTube, Next Time For You. It's NEXTTIME, the number 4 and U, or my MySpace, which is MySpace at T-Rex Boxing Club. And you can go from there.
Well, good stuff, Coach Rick. Well, I thank everybody for coming here once again. We have a real good show. Hope everybody tune in next week for Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I'd like to thank Blood, I think 916 Chris, Grindshine for calling in and sticking with us, Coach Rick for telling, you know, giving us his experience. We do want to give a shout out to our partner site, standandfight.com. Make sure you guys check that out. And other than that, I'll see you brothers next week, okay? Like usual, we don't have enough time, but we'll take it to the forums, we'll take it to the internet, and until next time, everybody be safe out there, okay?
All right now. Y'all be easy.
All right. Yep.
All right, be good, everybody.
Even in the ring.
Radio.
Go ahead, who's this?
Yo, David Chen.
Is it me, man, or is Marquez just a goddamn beast?
Every time Marquez moves up in weight, moves to a different division, he's fighting the toughest competition he can find there. You know, he's not just finding a name that's stylistically good for him. He's fighting the hardest fight he could fight and then winning.
See, if anything's killing boxing, it's boxing, not UFC.
You know, I won't bash MMA and I won't say, you know, it's killing boxing or is better, you know, everybody has their own opinion.
Even in the ring,
radio.
Shane Mosley versus Margarito sold out the Staples Center, and that was the largest attendance for any event. Everything, every concert, anything. That was the most recent. And that was just recently. So that's really where boxing is headed, along with the Ricky Hatton, Manny Pacquiao, selling out.
Leave it in the ring. Okay, but everybody right now, if you're calling in, I got a couple more calls calling in. I'm not going to pass you through at the moment, but there is a chat room, and if you look on there, there's a chat room. You can start chopping it up or ask your questions, and I will pass you in through as soon as we can.